Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Some California counties, with their beautiful open landscape, naturally invite people into the outdoors. So what do you do about the stay-home orders and then the need to guard public safety? Ryan Groover's on the phone from Nevada County, where the popular Yuba River winds through the foothills. It draws people to Nevada City, to Grass Valley, and the many, many surrounding open square miles of nature. Mr. Groover is the county's Health and Human Services Director, and Ryan, glad to have you on Insight today. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Beth. Thank you so much for having me today.
Are you ready for people to start venturing out to your area, or is that already happening?
So that's definitely an area of concern for us. Nevada County has 38 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and unfortunately one death. And for perspective, we have approximately 100,000 people in our county. And in late March to early April, we were experiencing the exponential growth that is so typical of this virus. And then exactly 2 weeks after the governor's stay-at-home order, we started to see a tapering off. We consider this to be somewhat of a dangerous time when you see the improvement in the weather and the tapering off of cases. It's very easy to transition from that initial fear to a place of complacency. And so we are worried, given that we're a magnet for outdoor recreation, that with the improvement, the allure of the river and the mountains will become more difficult to resist. And that outdoor activity, even though you're outdoors and you're theoretically spaced apart, the congregation in parking lots, restroom facilities, and things like that remain a deep concern. And we don't want to get to a situation, given the dormancy of this virus, where it takes a week, 2 weeks before we know we're back in the midst of an outbreak. So we're trying to be very methodical and data-informed in terms of how we think about starting to open things up and the guidance and supports we can provide to allow people to live their lives and enjoy this beautiful community.
You have a new data project. I'll get to that in a second. But I do want to ask about the fact that there is sort of a geography here, perhaps, at play. The eastern side of the city is full of second homes, vacation homes, cabins. It's a very popular area to go. Have you seen any difference in cases and where cases are trending from a geography standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up. You mentioned the Yuba River at the outset. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the outdoor offerings that are in Eastern County, which encompasses the town of Truckee. It's really a region. The community doesn't necessarily stop at the borders, and so we have a regional approach there. And definitely, because of the factors that you've mentioned, short-term rentals, second homes, people coming into the community to recreate, we have seen a heightened level of cases in the Eastern County. In fact, 26 out of our 38 cases were there. That's 68%, despite the fact that the Eastern County only represents 18% of our population. So we've been very active in working with the town. The town of Truckee has been very proactive, as has their hospital, Tahoe Forest Hospital, and we've been working with neighboring jurisdictions, Placer, El Dorado, and Washoe counties, on a regional approach to supporting the needs of the community up there and trying to make sure that we're not encouraging spread by having people coming and using second short-term rentals and things of that nature.
Tell me more about what you think is happening there and why these numbers are so different.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of travel through that region. The I-80 corridor goes right through there. And then there was definitely, I will say that the leveling of cases includes Eastern County. We saw no cases between April 7th and then until a few days ago, we started seeing just a handful of more cases. So the main growth in the beginning of the outbreak was definitely in the Eastern County, and it has tapered there as well. So I want to point that out. But initially, large areas of concern were, first reports of widespread COVID-19 transmission in California really was focused around Bay Area, and there were reports of people with second homes trying to escape the situation in the Bay Area and come up to the mountains, and that was a false sense of security coming up here. It's something that we've been trying to get out there is that, look, per capita, the level of hospital beds available in a rural community with a 29-bed hospital compared to being in San Francisco or San Mateo, there's a lot less healthcare infrastructure to deal with an outbreak. And the level of transmission that we saw far outpaced the per capita transmission in the state, and we're very thankful that that has started to taper off.
So what's critical to you as you decide what reopening might look like, even opening up campgrounds or recreational outdoor areas?
Yeah, so we're trying to be methodical and data-informed. The governor listed 6 criteria for reopening, and we're forming a task force that includes local decision-makers, which will include those that from like the Forest Service and State Parks that, and the Nevada Irrigation District that offer a lot of recreational facilities, also with representation from our cities and town. We're going to try to take a reasonable approach that allows people to live their lives while still having safeguards. If I can be, if I can use an analogy for a moment, if you're a swim coach and you tell your swimmers that to hold their breath for 10 minutes, they're either going to drown or they're going to disobey. So we can't be so rigid in our interpretation that our citizens face a choice between disobeying or drowning. We have to make sure that we're allowing people to live their lives in a way that makes the healthy choice the right choice, if that makes sense.
Number one on the governor's roadmap then is testing and the ability to test. So talk to me about what's happening in the county, and maybe this goes hand in hand with the community data project and understanding what the infections are doing in people in the county.
Sure. So testing in Nevada County, there is testing in Nevada County. We've conducted around 900 tests in the county, not we as in public health, but in the community there have been around 900 tests, which is just above the state average, but it's still far from adequate to meet the governor's first criteria for reopening, which is really that ability to aggressively test and contact trace. But testing has gradually started to open up a bit. Our hospitals have started to develop some testing capacity. One of our hospitals has one of these Abbott machines that does quick turnaround, but there's still not enough testing to really ensure that that we can get back to what's called a containment phase of the outbreak. If we don't have community transmission, but we have adequate testing, then we can start to lift some of the restrictions and then aggressively respond to cases as they come up with contact tracing and isolation and quarantine and that kind of a strategy that's more typical of the beginning of an outbreak. And that's where we're trying to return. And so the testing capacity is something that's really an issue at the state and federal levels as well. But what we are trying to do is control the things that are within our power, like making sure that our public health department has adequate capacity to do that contact tracing and investigation. So we're highly focused on that right now.
You sound very aggressive. I do want to know about the data project, and it is, if this is the same one that I'm familiar with, the Connecting Point, a Google Doc-based project, and sometimes there have been issues of concern raised about what people are asked to put into this document, and tell me how you plan to lay it out and what your thoughts are about privacy with it.
So the idea behind this data project, it's a community surveillance project. Surveillance, in this sense, refers to looking out for symptomology associated with COVID-19, and in the absence of testing, allowing people to go out and fill out kind of what their symptoms are so that we can track at a broader level than testing would allow the level of symptoms that are in the community. Part of the issues with testing are that they've been pretty narrowly available previously to people with the more severe symptoms. And so that means that there's a lot of unrecognized COVID-19 potentially in the community. This study recently out of Stanford University showed that the level of COVID-19 antibodies in Santa Clara County was vastly larger than the percentage of the number of people
right.
who had actually tested positive. And so this is a tool that's been used in some other jurisdictions for people to enter their symptoms and public health to get some kind of county-level data in terms of how widespread it might be beyond what's showing up through the testing. And so it is something that we're vetting through our HIPAA compliance officer and making sure that this isn't putting people's private health information out there. That's a top concern for our agency in normal times, and it remains a top concern for us now to make sure that that's not data that is personally identifiable or accessible to anybody that shouldn't have it.
Okay, but the symptom tracker, as you're calling it, is now up and available, correct?
Correct, at Connecting Point.
Okay. And tomorrow you have a community relief fund that officially goes live. Will you explain that?
Sure. So we're very cognizant of the fact that this public health response to this pandemic has created a lot of hardships throughout the community for local businesses, for nonprofits that are now struggling to keep their doors open. And so the county has provided seed funding to try to spur philanthropic donations so that we can raise money to support struggling local businesses and individuals and nonprofits. And so our Caleb Dardick in our CEO's office is working with organizations on both sides of the county to try to raise as much money as possible to inject some much-needed relief into our community. So we're very excited about that effort. And more information on that and everything else we've been talking about is available on our website at mynevadacounty.com/coronavirus.
Okay. I just quickly want you to tell me if there are any big gaps. For some areas, it's distance learning tools. Sometimes it's food and food bank needs or outreach to at-risk groups. Where are you seeing these kind of potholes in what you're able to take care of right now?
So I would say that we've been very proactive in terms of supporting our homeless community, skilled nursing facilities. Our schools have been doing a great job. So really it's that governor's first condition that is highest on my radar in terms of having that testing capacity and that contact tracing capacity to be able to return to some form of normalcy and have a strategy in place to contain. So I think we've done a good job supporting the nutrition needs and those other kind of vulnerable groups that you listed. It's really those conditions for returning to normalcy that I see as the big struggle coming up, and people returning to complacency if they see the cases aren't growing, since it could so quickly reverse and go the other direction.
Okay, one more question. Let's look down the road in May to Memorial Weekend. What do you imagine Memorial Weekend looking like in the Nevada City, Grass Valley, Nevada County area?
And Truckee, yeah, it definitely has to look different. We need to ensure that there's social distancing, that the facilities that encourage people to congregate are either not in operation or operating differently. And so that's definitely part of what our task forces are going to be looking at in terms of developing that guidance and make sure that there are ways for people to do what they have to do, which is get outside and be physical and make sure that they're maintaining their physical well-being and emotional well-being in a way that's not going to escalate the public health crisis. And so it's going to, hopefully we'll have something in place where people can enjoy the weekend, but in a way that's safe.
And thank you for the reminders about Truckee, such a beautiful little town and area and part, obviously, of Nevada County as well. All right. So for now, the stay-at-home orders are firmly in place. Is that a yes?
That is a yes.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us and giving us an update on the county.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Ryan Groover. He is Nevada County's Health and Human Services Director. Now to the North State region of the state, where the coronavirus pandemic comes on the heels of the campfire disaster of 2018. Many people are still in recovery from the experience of that wildfire and previous wildfires. And now there are challenges to providing health care on top of that. Take a listen to Elizabeth Gunderson. She's president of MedSpire Health. And this is from a conversation she had with Christian Solis from North State Public Radio.
There is obviously sort of the kind of the limited resources that were in place even before this pandemic, that there really just aren't that many clinics. And then there's the fact that there's a high percentage of low income that of folks that live on the ridge. But I think that the biggest barrier right now is just fear. What I'm seeing from the phone calls that we're receiving is that patients who have medical concerns and are, actually sick and should see a provider are instead of doing that, are staying home just because they're afraid to interact with the healthcare system. They're afraid of being exposed to the virus. They're afraid of sitting in a doctor's office with other sick patients, knowing that they themselves are medically fragile. And so that's in and of itself a really big problem, because the longer that patients wait at home when they're sick, the sicker that they're going to be when they actually are seen by a provider face to face.
And this is something that's happening everywhere. Elizabeth Gunderson is on the phone with us from San Francisco. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for joining us on Insight.
Hi, thanks for having me. Good morning.
You made such a compelling point in that piece of the interview. People might be afraid to deal with health problems. Would you address that in more detail? Give me some examples of the calls you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Patients who have conditions that could potentially get worse, like urinary tract infections, high blood pressure, poorly controlled diabetes that, you know, would in a normal context be following up with their primary care providers or seeking medical care, are not doing that. And so I think what we have to do as a medical community is bring healthcare home to our patients as much as we can. And I think that, you know, that looks like telehealth, that looks like phone calls, like video visits, just more aggressively following up with patients in their own homes so that, you know, we bring them in when they need to come in, but we're being proactive about monitoring their health from afar since they're not coming to clinics and they're not coming to the hospital.
If there's some sort of circumstance going on that requires a prescription, but it's a telemedicine visit and nobody's seeing each other in person, can a prescription still be written? Is the same sort of care able to be carried out by phone or by video conference?
I would say I didn't have a lot of experience with telemedicine prior to this pandemic, and I've really been surprised how much medicine you can conduct over the phone and over video. There's a lot you can glean just from doing a really good review of systems and getting a really good history from patients. And so the answer is yes, that we most prescriptions can just be called in. And then, again, I think the important part of that is then follow-up. So if you call in a new blood pressure medication for a patient, make sure they have a blood pressure cuff at home, and then schedule a series of follow-up phone calls to track their blood pressure so you make sure the medication is efficacious. The same thing if you prescribe an antibiotic, for example, for a urinary tract infection. I think the follow-up is a really important piece.
So do you have locations throughout the North State area from San Francisco eastward? Are there standing clinics or trailers?
We serve just the communities in Butte County that were impacted by the fire. So we don't have anything in San Francisco or Sacramento. And we don't have permanent physical locations. We're mobile clinics. So we set up shop kind of the day of our scheduled clinic days. We've been using church parking lots. We use an old firehouse. We've used local businesses in the community. So we kind of just go wherever we can find physical space, and we basically carry our home around on our back. Kind of we carry our setup in trucks and just set up the same day. And that allows us to keep our costs extremely low so we can help more patients.
Have people come with some of those symptoms that might be COVID-19, might not be? Fever, the cough, shortness of breath, and then what happens?
So we actually are doing all of our medicine right now is via telehealth. And that was a decision we made because we bring volunteers from all over the North State, and our patient population is so medically fragile, elderly, vulnerable. And so also because of the shortages of PPE, we made the decision to do home visits for patients when needed, if they need a face-to-face appointment, and then to do telehealth. So for the patients who present with symptoms that look like COVID or make us suspect they could be positive, we're doing phone monitoring of their symptoms and being preemptive if they need to go in face to face. But a lot of patients can just quarantine at home and do kind of symptom management. They don't actually need to go into to a doctor's office or to the hospital. They're not sick enough to need that.
For someone listening who might not have been aware of your services, although you've been present in the community all through last year since Campfire Recovery, how do people get in touch with you? What are the insurance requirements or previous visit requirements?
Oh, yeah, thank you for asking that. So we are we're available by telephone 24/7. We do have an answering machine set up that patients can leave messages on, and we return phone calls within a couple of hours. So they can call us anytime. They can reach out, and that telephone service is also HIPAA protected. So any information they leave is secure. They can reach out to us via social media. They can email us. We have posters all over the community with our information. So really, we just want to let patients know that we're here for them all the time. And we don't take insurance. We don't take payment. We are completely 100% free. We don't ask to see identification. We just want to serve patients. And so we don't need any documentation. And let's see, did I address everything?
You did, and we'll post a link, but would you mind giving the phone number for someone who might be ready to write it down?
Oh, yeah, sorry, hold on 1 second. I actually don't have it memorized, although I should. Let's see, it is 1-833-MEDSPIRE.
MEDSPIRE.
Yeah, let's see. So it is...
It's okay. I'd rather you have it be correct, Elizabeth.
Thank you. So 833-633-7747. You can also email us at info@medspire.org.
Okay. Again, that's 833-633-7747.
Yes.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for your time. I think it's so important to speak directly to the parts of all of this that we're afraid of, whatever it might be, and figure out what the pathway is through it, because that helps us get to the other side. And I appreciate the conversation today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
You take care and stay safe. Elizabeth Gunderson is president of MedSpire Health. Again, that number, 833-633-7747, if you are anywhere in the Butte County area. And we'll post a link at capradio.org/insight. Our uplift is coming up next. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.